Dina Crowder is the Executive Director of the Contra Costa County Branch of NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, and the founder of Black Minds Matter 2. She understands the complex systems of struggle that can directly feed into the cycle of incarceration for which California is outnumbered only by Texas in terms of population members living behind bars. At the moment, just shy of 100,000 Californians are incarcerated and some 39,000 are on parole. I spoke with Gina Crowder about these statistics and about her work with Black Minds Matter 2. Crowder aims to destigmatize and decriminalize mental health for Black and Brown people.
In doing the work that I do, which is to support non-clinical supports for those who live with mental health challenges, we recognize right away the community most harmed is African American. And if you have strategies and approaches that support them and how they heal, instead of criminalizing what is a medical condition, then you could easily improve outcome for all.
And for those who don't know what NAMI is, that is?
That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we're in Contra Costa branch.
And you started a special program called Black Minds Matter.
Yeah, Black Minds Matter too, because all of the programming is set up with such a one-size-fit-all. They don't take in consideration things like African Americans metabolizing their meds at a much lower rate. So a lot of times they're not going to be consistent with their meds because they're going to be over-medicated and not feeling like themselves. Or the fact, as I said earlier, in most juvenile justice systems, if you go to the juvenile justice system, we know statistically 60 to 70% of those youth live with a mental illness, like some adverse childhood experience that caused the trauma, that caused them not regulate emotions, and then sadly also commit crimes, because I'm not going to say they're not guilty for the crimes, but if we could figure out how not to cage people from other communities, we should be able to figure it out, because at that age, most are doing things. So what makes a cop or anyone decide you must be punished for it and you can go get counseling for it?
It's systemic, right?
Yeah, it's systemic. And it's not one person, it's not one department, it's just the culture. So often we'll say, well, that's the lead of the probation, or that's the lead. No, and it doesn't matter what color they are. It's embedded in the structure, and we have a supply and demand approach, and sometimes it's counselors and others thinking about their jobs. We can abolish. I mean, this is the only country that has the levels of incarceration that we have. It's ridiculous.
And I have to ask you this, because it was very interesting to be listening to you with the image of Oscar Grant in the background, talking about the way that the loss of this man caused trauma in this community.
Yeah.
And right now we have a moment in California where the governor is trying to pass SB 326 and programs to make it easier to conserve people. And a lot of people say this is the way to prolong intergenerational trauma.
Well, I mean, I work with people who have severe mental illness. So there's a privileged voice and then there's a reality. And for me, because we have not addressed mental health in the way that we should, we have individuals from all communities and backgrounds who may come home from college when the first onset of the mental illness and their family members not understand it, and they, you know, might start smoking pot or drinking. So we're looking at those behaviors first. And if we had a more preventative community-defined approach earlier on for all community members, we wouldn't be struggling with California having the largest population of the unsheltered. And the governor wanting to take mental health treatment dollars away. I think most people, because the challenges with those being unsheltered hit so many homes, if we could pay a half cent sales tax for mental health, we are all willing to pay a half cent sales tax for the unsheltered. And I would say maybe the millionaire's tax for mental health services act, we can lower that amount to 500,000. Incomes over 500,000 can pay half. You know, and I think people would be okay for it.
What would you tell Governor Newsom about trying to use the one-size-fits-all approach?
That it does not work, and that his road to trying to become our next president shouldn't harm individuals impacted by mental illness. If I had a conversation with him, I would say, I so appreciate you having attention on mental health. But let's do it for the right reasons, and let's make sure that we are focusing on solutions that don't do harm, because the approach you're taking is actually going to wind up being more costly in the end. Not going to be less costly. Prevention always, even if it's just the price of the person's quality of life, that's a high price to pay to have people have to have so many failures, when we know that mental health, people live with mental health, if you wait long, there's more damage done. If, you know, just the experience of going to psych emergency services is traumatic enough. Like, we know those who are incarcerated wind up having long-term, you know, mental health from just being incarcerated. So we just got to get it right and ask the correct people, not the ones that are so privileged.
Not the armchair deciders, right?
Yeah.
People on the ground.
Yeah. You got to ask the community.
So we know there's resources like 211 for people who might be struggling.
That's a resource number, supposed to be a portal for housing. But, I mean, basically, when someone calls there, they don't necessarily have the supports that they need to tell them. Like, in Contra Costa County, at our crisis suicide line, when the African American called, they actually have my cell phone number as the, you know, and I'm non-clinical, so I'm able, you know, how many steps should a person have to take to get to the right call? We have 988 now, which is the Miles House Suicide Prevention, you know, crisis hotline.
So 988 is the suicide prevention hotline.
Yeah, okay. That's the new hotline, and it's national. I mean, if Trump did one thing, through the Heroics Act, he put that number, but he didn't give the education around it. He didn't fund, you know, he didn't fund social workers so that law enforcement wouldn't be the first to arrive. We're still going to have law enforcement be the first to arrive, because we have to shift that culture. And when they do arrive, they only generally will give the, like, approval. And we know it shouldn't be law enforcement deciding if a person met the criteria of a 5150, but they are.
Right.
And when they do, too often, that's a biased decision as well. You know, based on sometimes whether they want to take a break. You know, or, you know, do I have time to go sit in psych emergency? Because it's such a waste, because when they get to the one in Martinez, they have to wait until there's a bed made available. And so all that time, they're just up there with the individual, you know, being treated like a criminal before they could get help. And in most county system, the person is released definitely within 72 hours, but in many cases within the first 12 hours.
And then what, right?
And then back onto the street for this cycle that just continues. It's ridiculous.
And the other thing I have to get you to talk about before I leave you is delirium, because we're hearing more and more people.
Delirium?
Yeah, talk about that.
So, yeah, and I think it's going to penetrate across the state, I mean the nation, eventually. But Gibson worked with the Quinto family, of course, because so many cases, the law enforcement would say that the person caused their own death by just their body function shutting down. But it's only been done, and 50% of the time that happens is African Americans. That's another reason for Black Lives Matter too. But typically a person of color, typically a person who lives with mental illness, and now the APA and all of the medical associations have decided it's junk science. It doesn't really, it's not really true. I remember the first time I heard it.
And then talk about that particular case too, just to give it.
With the Angelo Quinto case, what's so unfortunate is when Angelo was killed in December, they just had an anniversary. His sister works with us at NAMI too, because we're trying to position people to do the policy work so that I don't have to. So, but in that particular case in December, Angelo had had an episode, and police had been called out in November. Well, I had gone out and given them all the brochures. What was happening with Angelo, he had anxiety, so he would not let go of his mom. He was like a kid in kindergarten. No, I don't want to stay here. First day of school.
Yeah.
And so he wouldn't let go. So, of course, Bea, who'd been his sister, who had been in college, came home. And it freaked her out, because although she knew that her brother lived with some PTSD and some other challenges from being in the military, she hadn't seen that behavior before. So she said, I'm not sure, you know, who I should have called. So she called Antioch Police Department, And the part that was so scandalous is they, you know, they take the family members away. So here he is fighting for life. They took him to the police department. How in the hell would you take them to the police department when their loved one is going to the hospital and you're gonna? And then the other insult was at some point they tried to say that he had fentanyl in his system, the medication that's used when you go to the hospital and they're trying to induce a coma so that they could work on you. So it's just all screwed up. It's the whole system is really screwed up. So I'm hoping that because of the fight that the Quinto family had with showing the bias that exists in a coroner's office, with them being so easily ready to side with the police. And remember, this happened in Antioch. And so when you start talking about Antioch, you're talking about the fact that we have racial text messages from cops. So the idea that two individuals from the Filipino community and then two African Americans were killed in my county on my watch, you know, it just bothers me to the point where I have to continue fighting. So once we get we're getting funding for an African American holistic wellness hub now in the county. Yes, we push. I came up with this 40 Voices campaign. We got allies and I partnered with a church out there. Well, the same is true for the AAPI community. The language barriers are such that if a person really does live with a mental illness and they want to get treatment and their family want to, we don't have the resources available to them because the counties have made such poor decisions around one size fit all. And that's what the governor needs to know. That doesn't work, to have a one size fit all and assume that a language line is going to be able to work with a family. No.
Right. Crowder says it's time to implement creative out-of-the-box strategies for both physical and mental health, particularly when it comes to communities of color.
Part of our African American Holistic Wellness Hub is even more, got more energy when my niece, pregnant and had that illness, and her mom had had it before and actually wound up terminating the pregnancy, because when you have that constant feeling of being nauseous, so you go to Sutter and you are back and forth and you're saying, hey, I can't keep anything down, I'm pregnant, and I think she's maybe 5 months pregnant, and they send you away because of the color of your skin. I mean, our VP is not doing Kamala Harris. I see a lot of energy, but I have to give her credit for the work that she's doing around the African-American maternal health care crisis.
So this happened in August.
To my, you know, so when I talk about a hub, I'm talking about not just health. I'm talking about start looking at education, start looking at employment. We African-Americans suffer at every level. I was on a call recently with the California Public Black Equity Group. And I just had one question for them, which was, we saw what happened after COVID. We closed the health equity gap for every community except for African Americans. So logically, if you're in the decision making, rather than just say vaccinations will be given to seniors, let's also prioritize vaccination for African Americans, because statistically, historically, they're going to be the ones most torn. The outcomes keep repeating themselves and we keep doing things the same way over and over again. So once the Dr. Rohan wasn't able to share with me that anything would be different, why am I wasting my time on these calls where they just check the box and you keep doing things the same way and not bringing the kind of energy to true change that could make a difference? So same as with Newsom, it's like, look at who's suffering the most, talk to those people, and then put in place the type of things that you need to have put in place so that we can stop the suffering.
And to bring us full circle, we're here in Fruitvale Station, where we're remembering Oscar Grant for the 15th time. And you said this is part of a community healing process.
It is.
Talk about that.
Well, it's a community healing process because so many communities stuff their feelings and don't talk about it. So every year, at least people get an opportunity. And every time I talk to people, we're adding people. They're having conversations like I had with you. Well, look at what happened to my loved one. We don't want to be silenced. We want to use our voice so that we're not inwardly venting and it's coming out through self-medication, alcohol, anger, not being able to regulate. That's what winds up happening when you have feelings and you're not able to you know, to have a place, a safe place to share. Community building opportunity here allows people to come together to have a place of healing. We just acknowledging what happened to Oscar should not have happened. Because you can often have, I mean, I'm not friends with a couple of individuals who were more connected to the law enforcement. One's husband and one was. And she said, well, he should have just did what they told him to do. I said, he's on his stomach with handcuffs on him when he got killed. What do you mean? So just educating people and making them see what's real. Because too often we the largest number of people who in their lives now are vets, right? It's because they go into a system that pretty much says, put this country ahead of even yourself, your mother. That's not natural. So then they have conflict and moral injury because they did. So it's the same with law enforcement. I mean, look, I live in Antioch, so I see what has happened with the law enforcement there, right? And what has happened is the chief left. I had a, what would we call it? Pizza with the chief, right? We had the pizza with the chief, and he promised these young people, young students from Antioch, that he was going to be there and see it through. And 2 weeks later, he resigned.
And then that becomes kind of an adverse childhood experience, right?
Right.
Somebody making a big promise that they're...
Yeah. How you promise this to these kids, and they're supposed to have faith. But, you know, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
So this is hard stuff, and you're still doing good work anyways.
Yeah,
and
I got so another 4 years in me. Because I love it. I love it when you go into decision makers and you are able, you know, to slap them in the face with reality, and they have nothing. That's how we get the $1 million allocated, because it's your facts. You showed us this. So since you showed us this, and you say this is the evidence-based practice to improve it, let's, I'm just giving it back to you. I get great joy out of that. I get great joy.
Beautiful.
And well, thank you.
What continues to give you hope, and what's the most important lesson you've learned from doing this work?
The hope is that because, really, this is a template for how things can be done differently. When you get the community voice, because I said it was 40 voices when it was not as many, but then we did build it, and then we took students to the Board of Supervisors and talked about, because in Contra Costa County, we have Measure X dollars, and that's what we're going to fund this hub. When we took the students there, then we were able to get them to see, wow, there's many more after these kids, and then we got faith leaders involved, so it was really, really wonderful.
That's Gina Crowder, the executive director of the Contra Costa County branch of NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, and the founder of Black Minds Matter 2.